Double O is a number to call. A wee bit later, we're going to be talking about how families manage when relationships break up. I'm going to speak now to Tim Lovejoy. He presented a documentary called Sharing Mum and Dad last night on Channel 4. Very interesting it was. I watched it. He himself is the father of twin girls and divorced from their mum, so he's got a personal interest in this subject. Morning, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. More than just a personal interest, did you go into this into this investigation with a definite viewpoint, given that you do have personal experience?
Yeah, I did actually. I was probably, when I started the documentary, I was probably preoccupied by the rights of my father's rights, basically, and rights of parents, because I thought there was a real problem with it. And when I got divorced 7 years ago. I've got amazing access to my children, by the way. I've got 50-50. My ex-wife's been amazing with it. But I always thought I was lucky, and I thought I shouldn't feel lucky. It should be, you know, I'm their dad. I should be allowed to see my children. But when I went into the documentary, it was all about my rights of father. And by the time I was a few weeks in, I realised it's actually about the rights of the children. You know, children need their mother and their father if they're around, and that's what we should be doing, trying to facilitate that happening. Mm. Basically, there's the way the system is at the moment. It sort of gives sort of all the power and all the control to one person. And it's hard not to use that, isn't it? You know, we're only human, all of us.
Yeah, I mean, we've had lots of discussions on this show, and I mean, it's a perennial talking point, isn't it, about how the system manages the breakup of relationships and with children. Yeah. Though I have to say, a very small percentage actually go to court. But I think what was really interesting for me in your programme last night was how much power that actually the parents have to take decisions and to take good decisions for themselves and their children. And that one very striking example of the couple and the little girl spent 1 week in mum's house, 1 week in dad's house, back to mum, back to dad, which I have to say immediately I thought, oh no, how horrific. And my 10-year-old was going, oh no, I wouldn't like that. But it seemed to work for them.
Well, you know, it wasn't quite like that, because if you read in between the lines, she still picks up from, I think it's gymnastics or PE or something once a week. And so they do see each other during the week, but they're basically trying to share the child as much as possible. They're trying to give the child the love of both the mother and the father as much as possible. Families are breaking down, as we know. It's part of our modern society. And I don't want to argue whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is happening and we have to be aware of that. It happened with me. It's not easy to share your children and they go between one house and another, but my kids don't mind it at all. They love it. The problem with the old way of looking at things is this word stability. As you saw in the documentary, sort of Baroness Butler Sloss and people like that, they think stability means bricks and mortar, one bedroom. I actually think stability is love of parents. Now, if you've got two parents in your life, you've gone together into bringing a child into the world as a team, that child has the love of the mother and the father. When you go into separation, I don't think it's stability if they only have the love of one parent and only see that one parent. They need both their parents in their lives. Mm. And we need to create a system for parents to understand this, and then it needs to filter down into society so parents think that child needs both of us, and parents need to basically grow up and get on with it. Mm. And it's really hard, because I mean, I've gone through it.
Yeah.
And even though my ex-wife has been amazing with this, it's been really hard for both of us. When you get Christmases and birthdays and, you know, tooth fairies and all sorts, it just causes so much, you know, animosity. It's very hard.
Is there anything you do differently?
Oh, I so much. I mean, I've got a massive list, because you get angry about what's going on and the things. And the most important thing is to never bring your children into the disputes and arguments. It is so hard to do that, though. And I'm sure there's lots of parents out there who say they never do it. But for the majority of us, we find it really hard. And, so I'd like our system and basically a culture of parents to think about the child first.
Yeah, I think, you know what, maybe that word culture is the better one in this kind of instance, because rather than parents thinking the system is doing me wrong, they maybe have to kind of step up to plate. And I'm sounding like a real preachy old bag here, I don't mean to, but you know, to realise that they've got more power to make it better than they might think that they have, you know.
Can I say one thing? After the show last night, the reaction on Twitter was absolutely huge, and my favourite thing was the amount of parents said, wow, that's already opened my eyes. That little girl, Lexi, was the star of the show.
She was terrific, wasn't she?
And look, when she gets older, she's going to probably want to spend more time at either her mum's or dad's, wherever her social life is. And hopefully the mum and dad will accept that, because that's what's going to happen with my children. They're 10 at the moment. I've got twin girls. When they're 13, 14, they'll probably have their own social life, maybe at their mum's house. And I won't then demand they come to me, but she was the star, and a lot of parents on Twitter went, wow, that's really interesting, I didn't realize how much the children need both the parents, etc., etc.
Yeah.
I think that was the big bit of it. The amount of mums and dads who are going, we need to share our children, they need the love of both of us, and hopefully we can get a system in place which helps parents do that.
Out of the mouths of babes, to use the cliche. It was a really good program, really interesting, Tim. It was Dispatch, it was on last night, but it is available on 4 on demand, 4AD OD online. Sharing Mum and Dad, it's called. Dispatches, presented by Tim Lovejoy there. Nice to speak to you, Tim. We're going to talk about this a bit later on. How do you go about sharing Mum and Dad? If it's a situation that you're in, please do get in touch. 0500 92 95 00. Oh, I've no idea. It's disappeared. Wait a second. Yeah, we're going to talk about the do's and don'ts of shared parenting, aren't we? Just spoken about the do's and don'ts of wedding speeches. Do's and don'ts of shared parenting. I guess shared parenting is a phrase that's been coined in the light of the high number of family breakups that we see in the UK, in contrast to Finland, where 95% of children live with both parents. In the UK, the figure is less than 70%. That sparked a Channel 4 documentary last night into how families cope with shared parenting. According to psychologist Nikki Tepper, the impact on the children depends not on who they live with and where they live, but how that situation is managed.
Stability doesn't necessarily have to be stability in one place. Stability can be 3 days here and 4 days there, or 1 week here and 1 week there. If you tell the child they're being picked up at 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, and that happens every Monday afternoon, they can learn to understand the framework that they live in, that it's not necessarily where you put the child, it's the quality.
Yeah, well, I was speaking to Tim Lovejoy, the presenter of that programme, that Dispatches programme last night, and he was saying that that was one of the things that he had really taken out of his investigations, that this notion of stability isn't necessarily all about where the child or the children physically are. It's about the kind of atmosphere created by the parents. And they had the very interesting example of this little girl, Lexi, who was a real cutie. And she spent half of her time with her mum and half of her time with her dad. And she moved from one house to the other back and forward with real regularity. And that seemed to work very well. So I'm looking this morning for your experiences of shared parenting. And positive experiences, very welcome. We often do talk about the subject, but when there's a high level of acrimony, but it doesn't have to be that way. Only 10% of cases end up in a court, and there being any real level of dispute. Most parents just have to work it out, and a lot of them working it out very well. So want to know how you manage. 0500 92 95 00. You can text 80295 or email callkate@bbc.co.uk. Barbara Walker is with us. Morning, Barbara.
Morning, Kay.
Morning. You split up with your partner when your kids were 9 and 11, is that right?
Yeah, they must have been about that. I don't actually remember exactly, but yeah, they were kind of that that age.
And, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you could say, well, you've done shared parenting. Is it always obvious what that actually means?
Well, when you say shared parenting, we didn't have anything like the children go sort of half the week to one house, half the week to the other. We did, obviously, to get divorced when your children are under 16, it's a legal requirement that you have a sort of agreement in place as to how you will cope with the children and what's to happen with the children and make provision. And we did all that, and we have a very formal legal agreement in place. But to be honest, right from the word go, we never really implemented it formally, and we left it very open so that the children were very comfortable and secure, and they were able to change about. But generally on school nights, children are with me, and that's just what's always happened, because I think that gives them, for us, I live nearer their school and everything, so that would make sense. And but we were very flexible, and arrangements could be changed at the last minute. My children are now a bit older, and so they decide themselves what's happening, but we're able to do that because they're now older. I think for the younger, you have to decide for them what they're going to be. And I think what you're starting and the year opening there. I think as long as the children are fully involved in that process, they're quite comfortable with it.
Well, that's
what they become. They very quickly become very comfortable with it.
I was going to ask you that because your children older now were 9 and 11, which is an interesting age, isn't it? I mean, they're not toddlers that you make every decision. That there has to be a level of consultation, but you know, still children. How much of a say did they have in it?
Well, when they didn't have a lot of say, other than I sat down and explained to them what was going to be happening, and we were very open with them, and I think that makes a huge difference for their security. They were, I mean, don't get me wrong, they were devastated at first when this all happened. They didn't see it coming, which maybe looking back, I would say I can't believe they couldn't see it coming, but they didn't see it coming, and so they were absolutely devastated. They worried dreadfully at the start that their father was going to be lonely because he was living in a flat on his own, but really they got very comfortable very quickly. But I think it takes both parents. I think both parents have to put everything behind them that's happened, the hurt, the animosity, everything else has to get put right behind you, and you just have to draw a line in the sand and say, right, we're all moving on. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to do that, which is, you know, in a way that's best for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think if everyone's happy, the children are very comfortable in that situation.
What were the hardest bits then, looking back?
Well, I think getting into a routine and letting the children feel that they were able to have a say in what was happening and in the arrangements, that it would work if they were worried about something, allowing them to, voice that and take it seriously, not to say this is what's happening. And I think as well, making, you know, no animosity, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's there or not. With the children, it was just not there, and it never has been. And so you just have to move on. You just have to make the decision to move on. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you let things eat away at you, it eats away at everyone, including your children.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm hesitating to use the word suffered because I don't want to. I can't think of another one. But, I mean, do you think it had an impact on your children, the fact that you and your partner did split up?
Well, I think everything has an impact on your children. So, yes, absolutely, it's had an impact. It's made them the people they are today. But I don't think it necessarily in the long term has to be a negative impact.
Right. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily a negative impact. Barbara, we're looking for calls on this. 0500 92 95 00 is a number to call. We know that many, many people are in this situation. One in three children are living in an arrangement not with both parents, so having to sort something out between their parents. And we want to explore how it can be done. Lots of people are doing it. What are the good ways of doing it? Any tips that you can pass on to other people, I'm sure would be very much appreciated. 0500 92 95 00 is the number to call. Fred is with us. Morning, Fred.
Morning, Kay.
It's just gone 2:50. We're talking about how families manage to organise shared parenting. I'm dancing around all these kind of terms. Once upon a time, we used the expression broken families. I'm very glad to say, or broken homes. I'm glad to say that we don't do that anymore. But the facts presented to us are that I think something like 45% of kids will experience the breakup of their parents' relationship by the time they are 16. So it is becoming very, very commonplace, something that we need to be able to manage. Mostly when we talk about it, it's in terms of very acrimonious splits and, you know, the courts get involved and what's going to happen with the children. The vast majority of people don't get to that. They have to work it out between themselves. So we're asking you this morning, if you have experienced this situation, how do you work it out? What works for you and what hasn't worked for you? 0500 92 95 00 is a number to call. Let's speak to John Fotheringham, family lawyer. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Kay.
Good morning. This concept of shared parenting, is it a kind of movable feast?
It certainly is. It can mean anything and nothing. Shared parenting can mean exactly 50-50. It can mean one night a fortnight. Both parents generally have joint and equal parental responsibilities and rights anyway. What matters, as your earlier speaker said, is the quality rather than the exact proportion of time that children spend with one parent rather than another. There are probably four things that I would want to tell people if they're ever in that situation.
Well, listen, John, do you mind if I ask you to keep those four things up your sleeve until just after the news? Because I really don't want to cut you off in the middle. We'll come back to John for those four things in just a couple of ticks. But let me know your experience of shared parenting. 0500 92 95 00.
80295. Call Kay now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Call Kay on BBC Radio Scotland with me, Kay Adams, and we're talking about how to manage shared parenting. That's how we now refer to the situation whereby a relationship breaks up, but of course parenting responsibilities don't go away. 45% of children will experience the breakup of their parents' relationship by the age of 16. So what are the do's and don'ts of managing that? 0500 92 95 00 is the number to call. Let me know your experience, and as I say, positive experiences, very much welcome. Channel 4 Dispatches last night profiled an interesting positive case where the little girl spent half the time with her mum and half the time with her dad. The presenter, Tim Lovejoy, took a real personal interest in this because he himself is divorced and the father of twin girls.
When separated parents can get on, how do they make it work? Susanna and Sandy Mackie split up 5 years ago. They were determined to split the childcare down the middle, 50-50.
If I saw less of my mum and less of my dad, I wouldn't be very happy. I'm so glad that they worked it out 50-50.
She was a very wise wee girl, that. Let me know your experiences of shared parenting, 0500 92 95 00. But just before the news, I was speaking to John Fothering, family law specialist. And John, you were saying that 50-50 or shared parenting, if you like, doesn't mean any single thing. It has to be worked out between the parents. Clearly, in that instance there, for that family, it was working really to put a line down the middle. But you were going to tell us four things to bear in mind.
Well, yes, indeed. Well, first of all, that Lexi's case, it was an interesting programme in some ways. The Lexi's case was unusual. It was very unusual because the circumstances for 50-50 shared parenting were absolutely ideal. The parents still got on. Mm. They lived geographically very close to each other. There was plenty of money and room in each house. Significantly, there were no new partners. There were no new step-siblings. These circumstances are unusual.
Mm.
And if that can happen and the parents still get on, then yes, it can work. But it doesn't matter that it's 50-50 in time. What matters, as your earlier contributor said, was the quality. Now, you asked the four don'ts.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, don't argue in front of the children. If a couple have split up, it's unlikely that they've split up for a happy reason. There will have been arguments, but don't do it in front of the children, nor when they may be listening upstairs. Second one, don't criticise the other parent in front of the children, or criticise the other parent to the child, more specifically. Children have very sensitive antennae, and that will be very upsetting to them. Don't do it. Third one is take a long view. It's not just until the kids are 16. You're going to be common grandparents of that child's own children. And if you take inappropriate steps now and try and score points now, then you and your children and the grandchildren are going to lose out in the longer term. Most significantly, I think, is the fourth one, and that is what the children need you to do is to act parentally. And one of the features about acting parentally is acting like a grown-up. So behave. Don't score points. Do and act in the interests of the children, not in the interest of scoring points against the other party.
Now, John, I cannot imagine there's a single person listening to this who dispassionately wouldn't think absolutely solid advice, couldn't disagree with one iota of it. But people are people, and when they're actually in the situation, they find it incredibly difficult.
Oh, it is difficult. It's incredibly difficult. But you still have to do it. Just because it's difficult, that's not an excuse for not doing it. There are particular difficulties that break in. One of them is the pal from down the road who wishes to refight his or her lost battles in the sex war from 5 years ago, and is shoving from behind to score points. That can be a very difficult factor in somebody whose life is breaking up.
I know. Well, John, listen, we've got David on the line, and it's good to hear from people who've been in the situation. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Good morning. I believe you and your partner divorced.
Yes, we've just recently divorced, but we've been separated for 5 years.
Right. I mean, we've had that list of don'ts there from John. Don't argue in front of the children. Don't criticise the other partner. Take a long view and, you know, basically be a grown-up. I'm sure you would agree that's sound advice.
Yeah, very much so. To begin with, we did argue quite a lot, and you could see my son really seeing it and not liking it, but we have crossed that barrier now and been more pleasant and as made a good effect on his life as well, so we are quite kind of pleasant to each other.
How hard is it, though, to follow that good advice?
at the beginning, it was quite difficult. I left my partner, and she wasn't very happy with that. So there was a bit of anger and animosity and hatred to me for quite a number of years. But we've crossed that bridge now. So my son now can see that we are trying to get on now for his benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making him more stable. He's doing ever better at school now. He's doing fantastically well. He's got two homes. He's got two loving parents who love him, and you can see that jointly. So it's working very, very well now.
So what is your arrangement now? How do you manage it?
Basically, I see my son on a Wednesday, a Friday, Saturday, and the second week it's a Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. So he stays with me two nights a week, and I've basically got most of the weekend. So it just works out perfect for me as well, and it has kind of life, and my wife owns her own business as well, so it works out for her the nights I've got staying and the days I've got staying as well, so mm-hmm. It works for both of us.
How old was he when you split, David? Are you there, David?
Hello.
Hi, sorry.
Sorry.
How old were you? How old was your child when you split?
My son was 5 when we split. He's going to be 10 on January. He's actually 10 next week.
Mm.
So it was quite hard for him. But I took my son aside and I explained what was happening, and I told him we are going to have two houses to go to. And he is quite sensitive of a child, but he took it fantastically well. He took it a lot better than what I actually thought he would take it.
Mm-hmm.
So children are very resilient when they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows the love he's got from his mother and his father, and it's showing now. So
you can make it work, David.
Yes, you can. You can, and unfortunately for me, I'm going to remarry in September, and I've sat him down and spoke to him, and I have a new partner, and we had a little son 14 months ago, and he's over the moon. Him having a brother, he's always wanted a brother or a sister. He's got that now, so no, he's a happy, happy child. And I had a lot of concerns about him to begin with, but now I can see him flourishing. He's really a good kid.
Would you do anything differently?
No, I think we've maybe at the beginning with all the arguing and shouting, but that's part of the course, because the feelings are really sore and feelings are really high at the beginning. But I'd maybe sat down with my ex-wife and maybe talked things through for his sake, maybe a few years ago, but to try and sort it out a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd have probably changed that. But now he's flourishing. He's doing fantastic at school. He's a really, really good kid. So.
Got it on the end. That's really good to hear. David, thank you very much. Nice to hear from you. Let me know your experiences of shared parenting. 0500 92 95 00, John in Glasgow. What a lot of sense. Barbara Walker talks. Barbara, I was speaking to just before the news. She must have a very sensible husband. And this text comes from John in Glasgow, who is her ex. Well, clearly they've still got a good relationship going on there. Let's speak to Mike Callaghan, just to take it from the child's point of view. Morning, Mike.
Morning.
Good morning. You're a big grown boy now, but what age were you when your parents split up?
I think I was about 11.
Right.
I don't remember exactly, but 11 sounds about right.
And how did you see it? Can you remember being 11 and working out what's happening here?
Yeah, I do. I vividly remember it, because I think kids, you pick up the psychological tremors around you. And in the months leading up before my parents split up, I was very aware of the unhappiness around, and it makes you tense, it makes you unhappy. So by the time they actually sat us down to tell us they were separating, it was such a huge relief and like a massive weight off your shoulders, because you weren't worrying about it anymore.
Right.
So that's something vividly I remember.
So I mean, you often hear of children saying they would do anything for their parents to stick together, that, you know, that's the ultimate, but you didn't have that feeling?
No, not at the time, because it was definitely the right thing to do. I mean, they didn't argue very much, but the kind of tension was there that you knew that needed to change,
mm-hmm.
even if you didn't quite understand that
mm-hmm.
when you're that young, but you know psychologically. It was a huge relief.
So once that decision was taken then, how was it managed from there on in?
Well, my mum moved somewhere else in the same town, and my little brother went to live with her. He was about 6 or 7. But shortly thereafter, they moved up north to near Aberdeen.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that meant that I went to my mum's every second weekend, because I stayed living with my dad, and my little brother went with my mum. I think the decision was that he was so young that he'd still be with his mum.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed stability to be with my dad. So I know it's an unusual situation. Not many people have that kind of
And
kids being split.
And were you consulted on that arrangement?
Well, we were told about it. I think consultation was probably a strong word. I think the decision already been made. But
and were you happy with it?
I don't remember. I mean, I don't remember specifically being unhappy about it. But I think it worked out very well in the end because, apart from anything else, my brother and I are now best friends. We see each other all the time. Whereas if you grew up together, you're living in each other's pockets all the time, it might be more angst.
Yeah, uh-huh. I mean, obviously, one of the major concerns about the number of breakups that we are seeing in the UK is the effect on children. Do you think maybe we overstate it to a certain extent? I mean, you seem fairly phlegmatic about it. Or did your parents do something essentially right in all of that?
I've had a lot of time to make my peace with it, for a start. I think they did something right by just being very open and upfront, and there was no animosity between them, so that made it easier. Listen, I mean, it wasn't obviously easy, because especially when I was the age I was, when you're 12, 13, 14, you've got plenty going on anyway, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're pretty messed up, and that obviously affects that. But I think in the long run, it's definitely been the best thing. Everyone's happy now. Everyone's remarried.
Mm-hmm.
I've got lots of excellent stepbrothers and stepsisters, and I think it's definitely for the best.
All worked out. Well, I mean, one of the pieces of advice that John Fotheringham gave was to take the long view. And I mean, I suppose really your story might kind of is another angle on that it kind of works out in the end. Let me bring in Stuart Valentine, who's the CEO of Relationships Scotland. Morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Do we maybe sweat this too much? I mean, of course, we should always be concerned about children and the impact on them at whatever stage they are in their life. But then you hear Mike, and you know what? It wasn't the worst thing. It wasn't great. It's kind of worked out. He's an adult now. He's got good relationships with other members in his family. You know, can we get too het up about it in the moment?
I think it's very good to hear the good news stories and what certain couples have done to make it much better for their children. But we're also aware that across Scotland, a third of all dads completely lose touch with their children after separation. So there's still a very large number of children who are not in touch with, in particular, the dad, sometimes their mum. And those families were very concerned about those children. We'd be concerned about, not that they can't go on and have perfectly good lives, but all research is pointing towards that it's positive for people to stay in touch with their dad, so long as there's no issues of abuse or violence. But where that's absent, it's best for children to remain in touch and to have a life with both of their parents in whatever capacity they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I suppose there's at least a couple of things in there. There's managing the fact that the relationship is split up and these parents have to continue to co-parent and how that impacts on the children. And then clearly the people who just don't manage to do that, and so the child loses contact, as you say. If we go with the situation where it kind of works out, and we had David earlier on and Michael was telling us his situation, can it be as good as two parents if it's done well?
I think it can be. Looking at research and hearing the experiences of children who have gone through separation, and the couples have handled the whole process very well. People do go on, absolutely have full lives without really any ongoing negative impact of separation. But it's all about, I guess, when parents are going through this, it's an enormous upheaval when people separate. It's incredibly difficult. Some people go down the road of going to family mediation. Indeed, over 2,000 people a year come to Relationships Scotland for family mediation, and that's a place where you can have a place of safety where the couple can explore all of the issues that they're struggling with and come to an agreement, and then leave the mediation process and go back and then work jointly to help their children manage the whole process. So it can work, but sometimes there'll be cases when families will really need additional support to get through that, and that's certainly something we and other agencies can provide.
Mm-hmm. We've got Rachel, whose parents split up when she was young. Morning, Rachel.
Hiya.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, yourself?
Good, I'm fine, thank you. How old were you when your parents split up?
Yeah, I was 2.
All right, so you really never known anything else?
Yeah, it's the only way it's ever been, really.
Right, and what was the arrangement then?
There wasn't really anything formal. Like, I stayed with my mum full time, and then every now and again I'd see my dad. And then as I got older, it was kind of more up to me. Like, when I wanted to see my dad, I would just go and see him.
Mm-hmm. In the sort of early stage, though, you didn't see so much of your dad?
Not a huge, like, obviously I see my mum more, and with his job he was travelling quite a lot, so it wasn't as easy to see him then, but I still seen him, like, a fair amount.
Right. Did you feel the lack of that?
A wee bit, but not hugely. Like, my mum was good in a way, like, she just kind of done it all, and then when I see my dad, he was good, and it was all quite amiable.
Right. And did you feel that you had, you know, a real say in what was happening, or were things decided for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, it was decided for me, but as I got older, it was totally up to me, and it was all, like, what I wanted to do.
And what age is older then? At what point did it start to change slightly?
Probably, like, from about 12, but then, like, by 15, it was, like, all me. If I wanted to see my dad, it was me that organised it.
Right. And what sort of relationship do you have with both of them now?
Well, I'm really close to my mum. Like, we're really good friends. And my dad as well, like, because it's kind of my own choice when I go to see him, it's all just quite comfortable. And
yeah, quite relaxed.
Yeah.
I mean, what John Fotheringham was saying there, that the four don'ts that he tells his clients is don't argue in front of the kids, don't criticise the other partner, take the long view and be a grown-up, without betraying too many confidences on the radio. Did your mum and dad manage that most of the time?
Yeah, all the time. There was never any, like, bitterness or anything about them.
Right. And how significant do you think that was for you then in the way that you were able to deal with it?
Oh, it was the most important part, because I think if they're not like that, it's really difficult, and like, I think kids can start to blame themselves, but when your parents are really nice and positive about it, then it's just normal, and it's just the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Rachel, thank you. Nice to speak to you. John Fotheringham, there you go. That is a vote of confidence for your advice, even though I was saying it's kind of difficult to do sometimes.
That's right.
Clearly it made a big difference to Rachel.
Yeah, that's right. It's great to hear these stories where people have managed to do it informally, just themselves. Not everybody can do that, of course. And Stuart was mentioning mediation. That's another very good way of doing it. The alternative is the new kid on the block is collaborative law, which some solicitors are qualified in. We are in Lindsay's and some other companies around the country. And this idea that came from America, which gets the people working together to find a solution that suits this family, rather than having it imposed from without by a judge who's never met you and never met your children and never will.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've been on the programme before, John, and we usually have been talking about situations where custody, and I know that's not the exact correct term in Scotland, but is disputed. But I was just speaking to Tim Lovejoy, the presenter of this programme last night, a bit earlier on, and saying that rather than the system, should we be finding a way of, to use that terrible word, empowering parents to make them realise this isn't something that is necessarily imposed on them by a system, but it is something that they are the architects of themselves?
I think they generally are. I think people are aware of that. The only ones we ever hear about are the ones that come to an adversarial court hearing. And, of course, they're the ones you hear about. They're far more interesting to the media. Why should the media be interested in a couple of adults sitting down together and sorting a difficult problem out privately? Mm-hmm. They're the ones you don't hear about. They don't come much to me either, because why would somebody come to me if they didn't have a problem? Mm-hmm. So we do get a distorted view sometimes.
I mean, but given that this is a fairly large sample of the population now, and I mean, I'm asking you an almost impossible question, but do you get the feeling that actually we're getting better at this?
Yes, I do.
Good.
Yes, I do. And there are various reasons for that. One of them is more easy for children, because it's never dead easy. But it used to be, say, a generation or two ago, when I was a young lawyer, then you would refer to a broken home. Mm. And the child of separated parents was probably the only one in the class and was rather unusual. There was a stigma attached to it. Now, family reforming, which I'd rather call it, is becoming the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And that child will not be the only child in the class. And it will not be an unusual thing to speak about. People should take pride in managing these things well. And of course, in any given family, you're not comparing separated families sorting out their separation well or badly. You're comparing that family with how they were doing when they were together.
Mm-hmm.
So is it better for the children to be living in a well-regulated, separated situation rather than in a broken-down family where there is argument and unhappiness, though people are staying together, in inverted commas, for the sake of the children?
Yeah. John, thank you very much. Good advice. Thanks also to Stuart Valentine from Relationships Scotland.